Does anybody know where Guy English is? Because I'll tell you where he's not.
We thought we'd come on the air to find out if you guys know where Guy English is. As he was supposed to be on this podcast.
Literally talking to him not 20 minutes ago. And
it was very funny.
And he just evaporated.
And then he disappeared.
Well, you know, it's hard to find good help these days.
It really is.
Good news. Yeah. We've replaced him with an AI.
Oh, excellent.
An A guy, if you will.
I haven't caught up on this this story. Have you read the story about the Apple AI thing?
I mean, need you be more specific.
Well, I don't know. I'd have to ask an AI.
Good. All right. Yeah. Hit me. What do you got?
Apple researchers reveal new AI system that can beat GPT-4. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Well,
I hadn't read this.
It sounds like it's just a research paper, though. It's like... So, until you actually ship something, I don't think it's really.
So I assume this is supposed to be pronounced as Realm, but I
would imagine.
I'm annoyed with its capitalization. Yeah. Realm.
Yeah. Is that an Apple-y thing? It seems like it's not quite an Apple-y thing, but okay.
Yeah, I have no idea. That is weird. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of stuff happening in AI, right now. And so it's like, it's very fast moving, I think, is one of the interesting bits about it. And so, there was a paper a couple weeks ago, too. The last month, where they said, like, training large language models to integrate both text and visual information, for example. They've published a lot of stuff. They clearly have people who are very smart working on, like, the theoretical sides of this.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, the...
But- I'm not sure how many people they have working on the rubber meeting the road.
Exactly,
part.
exactly. That is the question: is how do you implement this? Because implementation is everything. And yeah, you might have great ideas, but if they don't run on your hardware, or they don't run well, or you struggle to figure out how the interaction models work, I think that is much more challenging. So. I don't think any of this stuff seems so high level that
right.
I doubt
and
any
it
of
can't
it will
be what they are planning for
this year.
WWDC.
Yeah, right. Exactly. There's no way that what they're doing in these papers is stuff that is like ready to be rolled out in 2 months. So, well. I mean, yeah, four months. Like, I mean, again, either way, they're not like it's got to be. This stuff feels like it's like a couple of years off to me.
Yeah.
Like based on the state it seems to be in. And that's good. I mean, like it gives you something to shoot towards, but it does bolster the idea that like we're looking at a situation a little bit, you know, Apple Mapsy where what comes out of the gate may not be what they're shooting towards. And I think they're trying to avoid that by like, this is one of the reasons I think they're cutting the deals with other AI providers is because they're trying to kind of bridge that gap.
Yeah.
Like, we got to be in this space, but, like, the stuff we want to do isn't ready yet. So, yeah. I don't see it being the ultimate stuff, but it does... I mean, it's not like they're going to stop working on it.
Yeah.
Presumably.
Yeah.
Unless something bad happens.
Yeah, and it does sort of... They like I said last week, I think they feel sort of defensive about this. They seem sort of defensive about this, and so some of this stuff is probably like, hey, we're in this game, too.
Right, exactly.
Sort of.
I'm here in this game.
sort of in this game, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the rubber meeting the road, can I talk about a thing that I bought?
Yeah, absolutely.
So funny thing about getting rid of your landline. Turns out your home security system goes through your landline.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I figured out not long after I got rid of the landline. Like, but I also knew that there
like
was...
Like 20 minutes not long or like a 2 weeks not
like
long?
Like a couple of days at least.
Okay, yeah.
So,
is it somebody robbed your house? Is that what happened?
No, it just started beeping. It started beeping way after I realized it, as a matter of fact. I was, I thought at some point, like the next few days, I was like, wait, that goes through there. I got to do something about that. And of course I didn't. And then it started, you know, beeping and complaining that obviously I can't phone home. So I called the company and was like, hey, I would like, you know, I want to switch. I got rid of my landline. I want to switch to going through IP, basically. And they're like, oh, sure. Yeah, we can do that. You got to get our IP kit, which is $700. And then it's going to cost you $12.
Chose a really bad time to take a sip of tea, John.
And it's going to cost you $12 more a month. Like,
how is this possible?
No. I think I will research other solutions. Thank you. So, yeah, so I looked around and, you know, obviously I wanted something that was HomeKit compatible. So I picked Abode and now I got a whole bunch of new Abode stuff in the house and it works pretty well. Actually, I mean, I would say it works well. There's definitely some things that I think I need to look into further. I mean, I just got it set up like 2 days ago. Because the notifications that I get or like, you know, the door, you know, a door has opened. It just says an Abode event has happened. That's the notification. And you have to go into the app.
That is far creepier, too.
You have to go into the app to find out. And you go into the app and it will show you which door was opened and closed or which ones are open, which ones are closed. But obviously that is a step that I would rather not have to take. I mean, I don't understand why. If it knows what happened, which it obviously does, why doesn't it pass that through to the notification? So I will have to. That could be a me thing that I haven't figured out yet, but I'm not quite sure that it is. So, and it came with a free camera, which I didn't really want in the first place. And in the second place, it required me to set up a separate, like, you know, specific 2.4 gigahertz network because it does not work on 5. I was like, really? So I did that. I did get it connected. The camera does not use HomeKit video, though. Yeah. So I decided I'm not gonna, and it's also one that you have to plug in. It doesn't have a battery. And I thought, I've got two cameras already. They work okay. I'm just not gonna add that particular thing. But you know, compared to my older style home security system, my legacy home security system, it's nice. It's, you know, you can turn it on and off from a widget and that's cool. So, and you know, share that, and sharing it with Karen to do that, and we'll get Hank roped in eventually. But I would say it's not perfect so far, but it was already cheaper than having to upgrade my existing system to IP. So,
right. Yeah. No, I get you. I mean, I've never really had a security system.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to a lot of my friends, and most of them don't. Yeah, but we've had one for. We had one. I think when we bought our previous house, it came with one already installed. And so we're like, okay, yeah, we'll just keep paying for that. And so when we moved into this house, we had it installed in here, and you know, so we've had one since the late 90s.
Right.
And now it seems like it seems too weird to not have one.
I guess. Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And there was a guy in the hanging out in the neighborhood a couple weeks ago. There was a guy living in the gulch. Who apparently was throwing things at people. So he has moved on. He's no longer in the neighborhood.
Thriller. Yeah.
But yeah, he is. So, you know, we would like to have something that would tell us if one of the doors opens. And now we do. Again.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you will be aware when a mode event happens.
That's right. Yeah, right. Because what will happen is I'll get a notification that says an abode event has happened.
Yeah, the only thing I get, I don't have a security system or anything. I mean, I have that smart lock that I installed, and I do get, on some of my devices, I get notifications telling me when it's been locked or unlocked. And what's nice is it's in HomeKit, so it tells me even who locked or unlocked it. I mean, which is to say, I don't get notifications when I lock or unlock it, but I get notifications when my wife locks it or unlocks it. And my child is not old enough to unlock or lock it, so that's fine.
Got that to look forward to.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be good enough about that.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. All right. I'm glad you got something.
Oh, and I told you, I texted you guys. I had a dream last night that, our dog ate our Vision Pro that we don't have.
That's why you don't have it, John.
Well,
the dog ate it.
He ate our
Vision Pro. Try going into the Apple Store and be like,
yeah, so sorry, my dog ate it.
Yeah, my dog ate the Vision Pro. Could you just give me a new one?
Yeah.
Is that an option?
Mm.
Are you compelled?
I think that voids
by
your imaginary warranty.
I paid for imaginary Apple Care on this.
Mm-hmm.
Are you more compelled by the existence of these spatial personas? Is that what they're calling them?
Well, that is at least something that seems. I'm not. But the stuff that came out prior to that, like the things that Jason tried, the baseball thing in particular, and then the MLS soccer thing, neither of those seemed terribly impressive, right?
The MLS thing seemed really, really lackluster. And I'm surprised because it feels like the kind of thing that should be, you control every element of this equation. It should be better, right? Like, you have been producing MLS games and you are own the Vision Pro and you are producing immersive content for the Vision Pro. So this, you know, there you go. Should be done. Should be great. And yet it seems as though that's not the case.
Yeah. It's sort of baffling,
I'm
right?
Very surprised. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is, again, from everything I've heard and from the stuff that I experienced in my super brief, you know, a time doing the demo, the immersive video stuff is really cool. Like, it's the stuff that's most interesting, I think. And it's the stuff which is also, I'm sure, expensive and difficult to produce. But, you know, maybe this is a thing that they're holding off on until there is more, you know, until they are closer to producing something that's a little bit more mass market.
I guess.
And so maybe they're just like, you know, working on it now and trying to put out dribs and drabs. But I felt like
things. It seems like it's like, so in caught in between, right? It's like, it's a real product. It's out there, but they don't seem to be producing a lot of content for it, given because it's not owned by that many people.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been out for 2 months or so, which is not forever, right? Like, I mean, it certainly seems like maybe this takes longer than you otherwise might, you know, have to like sort of plan ahead for. But right. I mean, they've been known it's coming too, right? Like, I don't know. I think it's probably some of the fact that it's still a cutting edge, you know, early adopter sort of device, and they're not putting their full weight behind it. But again, maybe they're building up a library so that when they want this to be a little bit more accessible to more people, they'll already have a big, you know, library of content.
That seems like a weird, an early adopter thing seems like a weird Apple product to me, right?
Yeah, I mean, but there aren't, it's been weird
the whole long, traditionally, the whole way along, they don't traditionally make those things. I mean, even the watch, which seems, you know, like it was good enough, but it could have been better on day one, I guess. I mean, that first, the Zero was a little slow, didn't have a lot of the exercise stuff, you know, a lot of the health stuff ready on the first version. But it was enough of a product, and they were definitely aiming it towards mass market, whereas this one is clearly not.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about that, and I think it's still true now, but like, you know, it's in development. I think there's, it's going to take some time, no matter what. And
what do you think their timing? Do you think they look at gaps in big product releases and because it was so the, you know, the iPhone came out in, was it 2007? Yeah.
Yep.
And then the watch was 2014.
2015, technically.
Announced in 2014. Shipped in 2015. Okay. And then Vision basically Pro. 9 years until the Vision Pro.
Yeah.
That seems, it seems a little longer. Well, I mean, mathematically speaking, it is.
Mm.
It's just interesting.
Interesting.
I wonder, like, if they felt pressure to release. I mean, they've definitely had other things that came out in between. And, you know, like AirPods, that's actually a huge product.
I mean, that's not a it's not a platform, right? But it is a big, significant money-making product. And of course, they've had a ton of services and stuff in the meanwhile, too. And like, you know, in addition, revving all their other products and stuff like that. So it's not like they're not doing anything.
Right.
But there are weird expectations when it comes to like the next big thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants to talk about that. And especially now that the car project has been canned, like, it does feel like a lot of hopes are resting on the Vision Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And it's perhaps a little shakier.
Yeah.
Then it's not a load bearing project, maybe like that you want to rest all your hopes.
I don't think
on.
You should
maybe
stack things on your Vision Pro.
It supports one or two hopes, maybe, but not like a whole bunch of hopes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that they do try to stagger it. It does kind of feel like there is a cadence there of like, you know, roughly every decade, you're putting out like sort of a big category defining product. But I think it gets harder too. Like, honestly, I think,
sure,
you know, because the further on you get, the better the stuff that came before, right? Like, because, you know, when the PC came out, when the Mac came out, there wasn't a previous thing to really beat, right? Like, it was kind of untrammeled ground, right? And then, you know, capitalizing on the iPod and the iPhone, like the iPhone especially, right? Like, I think that's the biggest struggle everybody has right now is smartphones are great.
Where do you go from there?
Yeah. Increasingly good, but like to the point of its diminishing return. So yeah, you obviously want to produce a product that is going to be able to take over that, you know, take that aegis. And
it's hard. I mean,
that?
You're a victim of your own success because you have made a, you know, quite arguably the biggest consumer product in the history of ever. So it's like, how do you top that?
Go home, shut it all down.
I mean, that's what I would do, but
I mean, my argument is that you don't need to keep topping it. I feel like, but I guess that's, you know, not popular, certainly in a capitalistic society.
I don't think it's even possible,
stuff,
really. Right.
I want you to make the stuff you already have work better.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But there's no margin in that, I guess.
No, there's not a lot. You got to come out with other things. But yeah, and I think it's an unreasonable expectation to imagine that they would come out with something that is as successful as the iPhone every 10 years. That's ridiculous.
Along those lines of making stuff work better, I've been playing around a bit this week. Let me ask you this. What do you rely on for spam filtering in email?
I use the regular mail stuff. I used to use Spam Sieve.
Okay.
And I have not used it in 10 years or something like that. I forget when I stopped using it. I don't really know why.
Yeah, I stopped using it. I ask because this is the week that I gave up and started using Spam Sieve, which I had never used before. Because I had used the built-in Apple spam filtering, but it was getting worse. Like, I don't know what, but like it started, you know, false positiving a bunch of emails for me, and like I wouldn't see them because I wouldn't check the junk folder regularly enough.
Yeah.
And then there was plenty of stuff getting through. There's like, I'm just sick of getting, like, one of the worst is I have like a, you know, a contact form on my website, and I get so much contact form spam, and I've tried a whole bunch of stuff on the server side to prevent that, you know, requiring captchas and trying to filter out like certain domains and stuff like that. And it just keeps coming.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is like not only junk, but like I get a lot of stuff in like Russian. It's like, I even know a little Russian. His name is Ivan. I don't know, Lex, we're here. That's the joke he would have made. Lex Friedman Memorial joking. But you know, it's just spam. It's just
to be
spam.
Clear, he's Lex not is dead. Not
I
dead.
Saw him, I literally saw him last night. He was in my living room. That's why
was I the
here.
Little Russian?
Ah, Comrade Moltskov.
Yeah, yeah.
But I got frustrated. Like, why is this problem? Why is this not better? Right? Like, after all these years, why is this technology not better? Why am I doing so much more work to try and just filter out the emails?
I don't get false positives. The only thing that ever happens to me that drives me bananas about like iCloud's mail is the fact that it just, there are some mails it just won't send through at all.
Oh, right? I mean, it eats stuff.
Yeah,
it eats
sometimes it's like, here's your, you know, like, click to send you a number to log into this site, and that won't go through. It's like, what am I supposed to do then? I mean, I guess I get a text, you know, I switch to text messaging or something like that. But
I find that I wrote a Macworld article. Yeah. I think Lex and I did a Macworld article on that like more than a decade ago, and they've never really acknowledged or
and it's a complete black box. You can't tell what the heck it's gonna keep out and what's gonna let through.
You know, it's tempted me to switch mail providers entirely, but I also it's hard, right? Like I have had my email address for 20 years and it's like I don't wanna switch.
Yeah.
Preferably.
It's practically impossible in many ways.
Right. I mean, because you can put up a forward, but then it's still kind of processing potential emails. Yeah.
And a lot of logins will be your old email address.
Oh, man. I almost sent this guy to you today, but so I've mentioned before, I bought the danmorin.com domain name, and it was previously owned by one of the other Dan Morins. And so I get email for him all the time because my address that I set up was previously his address. It's not like mistaken stuff. It's stuff where he had put that in as his login address, but because I now own the domain, I get email. And it really hit a new high last night, which I didn't know until this morning. I got up, I saw I had a text, and it was like, it looks like a legit, like, it's been just an SMS or something. It is, I shit you not, it is just a text. It's a photo, clearly a photo taken of his driver license.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Wow.
I don't even know what to do. It's like, it feels like the kind of thing that would be like one of those like spam target things that we see now. But like at the same time, it's like, no, this is just a guy who did. And like, and I'm sitting there going like, I don't even know why I got this. Did they text it to me or did they send it to it as an iMessage or what?
Right.
Like, my iMessage is not registered with that email. I am very confused. That's bizarre. Anyway,
that is very strange. Yeah.
It's for sure like a picture of his driver's license, and I just don't know what to do about that. So anyway,
have you considered identity theft?
It's a crime, and I've decided it's also feels.
I'm just saying. Have you considered?
It feels less useful to steal the identity of somebody with the same name.
With the same name.
Like, limited number of culprits. Anyway.
It's a lateral move in identity.
Yeah,
theft.
Exactly. Yeah. And this guy's older than me, so I don't think that's really helping at all. So, anyways. Spam filtering. So I set up SpamSieve. Here's my initial impression of SpamSieve, is that it seems good. But I hate the fact that I have to do any training. Like, I resent that. I don't want to tell my computer how to do its job. Like, that's why I have a computer. Right. But it's fine. It's like, I'm willing to accept that and be like, all right, I'll give it. Several people are like, you only need to do it for like a week, and it seems to pretty much pick it up. It's gotten better even in the, like, the 2 or 3 days I've been using it, for sure. But I think that fundamentally, because it's like a bolt-on, it's just, it's complicated, right? Like, I would never tell anybody who is like non-technical to set this up.
Yeah.
Like, it's not as easy as just like, all right, I installed it. Now I click the button and it's doing its thing. It's like, no. Like, especially if you have multiple devices or multiple Macs that you want to take advantage of, there's like a whole thing where you have to like install an Apple script and all this. And I'm like, even as I'm doing it, I'm like, oh God, am I ever going to be able to unwind this if it doesn't work?
Yeah.
Like, it's just a real pain. And like, so we'll see. I'm committed to giving it a go for the, you know, like the trial period at least. And we'll see if then after it's like, you know, 30 days or whatever, 14, 30 days, I don't remember. It'll see if it's sort of earned its place.
Right.
But
I remember liking it at the time. And I think I was just like, well, you know, it's another thing I'm paying for. Maybe I can use the, and I think they had maybe made some improvements to the mail one. And like I said, I don't really have false positives that I know of.
Well, that's the problem.
I just checked, and I don't. Most of it's crap. I think the my bigger problem is the other way around, where I get a whole bunch of like, I seem to get like all these like mailing list things that I obviously don't want to see. Just garbage.
Yeah, and I this is a partially a me thing too, but like there are some things I feel I feel weirdly bad about marking as spam because there are things where they're like, I know how to get off that mailing list. Like I could just unsubscribe from it. So it's not really spam. It's just a, like, I've been lazy about like going through the whole unsubscribe thing. Like there's other places where legitimately, like I get PR pitches still day in, day out. And those things, some of them, the good ones let you unsubscribe and I do that, but they just keep proliferating. And then there are several people who I'm on PR lists where it's like, there is no unsubscribe link. So I'd have to like email them and be like, stop.
Yeah.
And those things I don't mind marking because they're unsolicited, right? Like things where it's like I signed up for an account somewhere and they sent me marketing emails. It's like, all right, I could go through and figure out how to turn that off.
Yeah. It's weird that you get different results. At least I get different results on my iPhone than I do on my Mac. Like the spam filtering.
Oh,
there are certain messages that I will see on my iPhone and I don't get on my Mac. Yeah.
Are they for the same account?
For the same, well, I think so. Well, yeah, I mean, I think it must be because they're all, I should check that, but I'm pretty sure that I have the same accounts on both devices.
Okay.
I can't imagine which one I don't have. There's
no on-device spam filtering on the iOS, though, is there?
Well, there's a folder, right? So I don't know.
Yeah, but the folder's just synced, should just be synced.
Synced to what's happening on your Mac?
I would assume so, yeah.
So maybe it's just like when in the morning before my Mac is awake and doing its job, they're coming in and I'm seeing them on my phone. That's probably what it is.
Also, all right, so here's a great example. I just went to look at my junk folder. This is an example of an email where I have this extremely mixed feelings about it because the subject of the email is my favorite band, Guster, is bringing they have a music festival that they curate up in Portland, Maine, and they got like a PR release telling me like, oh, it's coming back and like here's what's going on and everything. I was like, okay, I am legit interested in this, but and this is the thing that pisses me off, the email it was sent to is my Mastodon address. And it's like, well, clearly did not sign up for that because I never would put that down. But so, yes, it turns out you can email. I think
a Mastodon address.
Well, I mean, it is formatted basically like an email address, right?
Yeah.
And I think it depends on the configuration of the server. So that may not be the case on like Mastodon.social or something, one of the big ones. But Zeppelin.flights, which is Jason Snell's instance, which I'm on, if you email demorin@zeppelin.flights, I will get the email.
Huh. Interesting.
Which I don't love.
Yeah, right.
But like now I'm also like, do I mark this as spam? I don't want anybody to send me email here, but also I'm kind of interested in the content.
Yeah. I keep trying to unsubscribe from like because you donate political things and then you they start emailing you whether you like it or not. And it's the same thing with texts too. I mean, like the number of times I've replied stop is just
stop to end.
And it doesn't stop. That's the thing.
Stop to end.
I mean, it stops that one particular candidate, and then the list gets sold to somebody, gets given to somebody else, sold to somebody else, whatever, however they do it, and then it starts all over again.
In our live chat, Spall mentioned that I asked if you could send MMS messages to email addresses. Yes, you can. And that I used to get that as a weird bug every once in a while when people would try to text me. I think iPhone days, would show up. It would like be like your phone number at like, you know, mms.att.com or something like that. And it would be, there were a couple random people who for some reason they would get caught in that trap where they would try to send me a text like with a photo or something and it would get emailed to me and end up in my spam filter. And I would not see it forever. I think that happened to my wife once when she was still had an Android phone. And it was, she'd be like, it was literally one of those cases where she'd be like, I texted you about this like a week ago. And I was like, I'm sorry. I have no record of this. Anyways. Mm. That was bad. Email, bad idea.
Yeah. Started out okay.
It was fine. And I'll add my other tech topic, and then we'll do some questions.
Okay.
wrap up since we've been already going for a little while.
Yeah.
Thinking about buying. So my Synology is almost full.
Oh my gosh, really?
I got 2 4 gig drives and they're mirrored.
That, 4 gig drives?
Yes. Fill those up real fast. Couple videos.
I think I found your problem.
I have 2 4 terabyte drives.
There you go.
When they get formatted and everything, they get down to like 3.5, I think, and they're mirrored, right? So like it's technically I get 3.5 terabytes. And
sticking with that joke just for a second, when you set Time Machine on a Synology, yes, and you have to set it. Yeah, I mean, I set this up for myself like a few months ago, and I set it up for Karen actually just the other day. And when you set it up, you know, it's like it makes you put it in gigabytes.
Yes.
But like if you know, you're going to create the folder and you create, you know, like if I want to set a boundary because I don't want it to take up the entire drive. So I did. But the first time I did it, it was like it filled up in like 2 minutes because I assumed that it was terabytes. But no, it was gigabytes. And so I had to go back in and multiply it by 1,000.
Wow. Yeah. That's part of the problem is that I set up my Time Machine for both my Mac Mini and my MacBook Air on it. And so that's like along with, you know, a bunch of backup stuff from like old, you know, old files that I had sort of like moved off old hard drives to put on there. I've hit my limit. So I've actually been going through removing some of my Plex content because it turns out like there's a lot of things on there. It's like I actually don't care about storing my media. Like
I wish I didn't.
I know, I just don't. There are lots of things on there where it's like that was a thing I had because it was hard to find, and it's like now I know I can find that somewhere, and I'm just not going to worry about it.
I think I've gotten rid of most of them, but for a while I was keeping shows that Hank watched, you know, loved when he was a kid.
Oh sure,
there's stuff that he will never, and none of us will ever watch ever again. But it was like, oh, I remember that show.
But even that is stuff where it's like it was not getting me that much room, and I realized the biggest issue is, and this is my problem, John, which is I have my setup to automatically archive the raw podcast audio files.
Yeah, well, I'm doing that because you did it.
Yeah, I have years of this stuff, and the biggest issue is now my workflow now automatically compresses all of it. So like, you know, I'll have like the Logic project sometimes, or I'll have, you know, a WAV file or whatever, and it gets automatically zipped up into an archive, and the archive gets copied over. But I had a lot of things where for like several years I was not doing that, so I just have the folders with all the files on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried at one point to be like, well, maybe I can just, you can compress stuff on the Synology. It's like, I'll just, you know, run the compression there. And it was really slow.
Yeah.
Because it's not, those machines do not have good processors, and that is a place where it makes a difference. And so I'm sitting there going like, do I need to do some sort of insane workflow where I copy the files back to the Mac Mini, compress them, and then re-upload them and delete them? And it's like, that seems dumb. So I've just been lazy and have. And so like, literally, this is where it comes down to, John, is like, should I just buy larger drives? Yeah. Like, is that just the easiest solution here? And so I've had a page with the 8 terabyte versions of the drives I have, which are honestly not that expensive. It's like one of those is like $168.
Yeah.
So like two of those, I don't know, it's like $350 or so less. That's not bad. So I could probably just buy a couple of those and slap them in and just not worry about it. Maybe that's the right answer.
Yeah.
But I did sit there thinking like, do I offload the Time Machine backup to like just an external drive that I've got sitting around, or do something else like that? And I don't know. I'm feeling the weird inertia.
Yeah. I got 6 terabyte drives and I was like, boy, like even with that, and I still have a bunch of room. I was like, man, maybe I should get new drives. Like, no, fill up the ones you have first. Don't just,
I've done that. I filled them up.
Yeah. No, you've got
I'm ahead of the game. Ahead of the game there.
You've got license to buy. That's fine.
I do have a Samsung 1 terabyte, SSD here that I used when I was like at some point backing up, like doing a full clone of my MacBook Air, but it's like now it's just been sitting here for months. It's like, I think it's okay. I don't think I actually need that clone. Like, so maybe I should repurpose this as a Time Machine drive and then just offload it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wish it is nice. This is, yeah.
It is nice backing up to an SSD. That is.
Yeah, no kidding.
Pretty sweet.
I have an SSD super duper drive hooked up to my Mac Mini.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, so that I guess I could hang the Time Machine off of it too, but I don't know. It's just like, I wish this was easier. It is one of the places where I do miss like Apple having its own appliance for this kind of thing.
Yeah. Right. But I believe a stranger has entered.
This episode of Rebound is brought to you by calendars. Just the concept of a calendar.
I think 35 minutes is the latest anybody has showed up to a 40-minute podcast.
Did you set it for East Coast time? Is that what?
I did. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I figured that must have
happened. I was expecting to record it at 5 p.m. today, and I'm like, oh, that's perfect. It's after work. Not a problem. 11 a.m. is smack dab in the middle of like an important meeting that I had. So,
what is the joke about? Like, there's only three hard problems in computer science. And...
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, no, that problem was supposed to be solved six hours ago.
One of them is podcasting.
Yeah, well, dealing with an idiot like me is another one. What did I miss? Anything?
We're done. No, I mean, like, we were gonna start questions.
No, we're gonna start questions. You showed up just in time for Ask Rebound questions.
Yeah.
I hope you're recording this, by the way, guy. Otherwise,
we're gonna sound insane.
No, I scrambled. I'm not that much of an idiot. I actually am recording.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
Well, I am that much of an idiot.
This episode, in addition to being brought to you by calendars, is also brought to you by Rebound Prime. Go to prime.reboundcast.com to sign up for a membership. Our membership started at just $5 a month, which, let me tell you, is a deal compared to some other podcast subscriptions.
That's right.
No inflation here yet. We'll probably inflate the price at some point. Sorry. But you can also pay $5 a month, $50 a year, and you get bootleg versions of the show that we post basically as soon as we finish recording, a bonus episode every single week, and of course, access to the Rebound Prime Discord, which includes now live streams via Discord as we're recording. And there's several people hanging out we're talking to. And it's great. And then, of course, you can submit questions for our Ask the Host segment. Let's answer some questions. I only have questions accessible via the Discord this week because Lex handles the questions submitted via the website. John and I never see those until Lex asks us. So I have no idea. We'll catch up with those next week. Sorry. Okay, Mihir asks, is Moltz worried about going to Cupertino because then Schiller will finally catch him?
And I said, they'll never take me alive. I think my answer stands.
That's not a great answer. I'm a little worried that they'll catch you dead.
I don't know. I don't think.
Why would he be mad at you?
No, he's not.
He just wants to hunt him for sport.
The most dangerous game.
Moltz is the most dangerous game.
The third most dangerous game, let's be honest.
Yeah. It's in the top three, though.
That's not bad. Not nothing.
He's got a toy Batleth with him at all times.
Mystery Man shows up, asks, what if Apple had never visited Xerox PARC in 1979. Would today's computer interface be much different, or was the mouse inevitable? That's a good question.
It is a good question.
A lot of thought.
Yeah.
Will we all still be typing command line stuff? I don't think so. That doesn't seem right. I feel like somebody would have, at some point, you know, mainstreamed the GUI.
I feel like Engelbart's ideas were so compelling. They would have escaped that lab. One way or the other. I think...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, once it was invented, it would probably have gotten picked up by somebody. No, but I think a more difficult question is, what if it hadn't been invented there? Would it have been invented someplace else?
Well...
Yeah. Like, I do think it took a... Like, Steve Jobs seeing it, getting excited about it, and then having the political capital at Apple at the time, be able to just say, you know what? The Apple II is great. We're doing this whole new thing. We're doing a Mac. It's different. It's a GUI. But also in there were, you know, networking. There's a whole bunch of stuff that came out of that. You know, the, what do they call it? Demo and all demos.
The mother of all demos, I think.
Mother of all demos. Yeah. Like, there were so many terrific and amazing ideas in there that, you know, weren't immediately picked up by Apple or the Mac, but eventually the industry sort of adopted them.
Can I spin you? Major different scenario that would have been amazing is so if Xerox itself had managed to capitalize on that outside of its research, as someone who owns several shares of Xerox stock that were given to him by his grandfather in like the 1980s. I wouldn't be doing this podcast, let me tell you that. I'd be living large out there with my wow. big Xerox money.
Huh. Yeah.
That is an interesting thing. Like, if Xerox had ran with it, I don't know if Adobe would have got PostScript or anything. Like, yeah. Xerox kind of, they were publishing it. Well, they were, you know, copies and all that, but like, it seems like a natural thing for them if they'd followed along that have got the desktop publishing crown for themselves in a way. Fascinating question.
Yeah.
I do think that like bitmap displays and all of that were coming just because computers were getting to the could happen. And I think we see that a bit now with like, you know, stuff. New capabilities of computers and sensors and vision unlocks action models, and I think that's what was happening at the time. How it would have ended up, I don't know, but it I think we would have got pretty close to a bitmap display with some kind of pointing device.
Yeah,
I think the biggest question to me is, if Microsoft still had dominance, would they have been impelled to create Windows or not? And I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like, part of me wonders if, like, you know, they still had such a stranglehold with DOS, whether or not they would have just been like, yeah, there's no reason, right? There's no reason. But somebody would have come along to compete, Rob.
I think they would have, because DOS was not so much of an operating system so much as an executable loader. It was very, very thin. And at the same time, Unix was coming along with time sharing and all that. I think they, I mean, Microsoft, I think even before they shipped Windows, had shipped a Unix derivative. And that was, remember microcomputers, like between a
mainframe and
personal computer? There was a lot of that stuff going on, and that would have trickled down. You
know? Oh, yeah, I remember.
I remember back in the day.
Yeah.
This is what makes Malt so dangerous. He's just, it's the experience.
Savvy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Impugnacious asks, I'm going to do these in, I think, the order they were submitted. One, what economic system would you like to see implemented in the world to govern tech creation and resource management?
This is why Guy is on this episode.
Civilization. No.
That's why Guy's, yeah. I mean, my answer for everything like that is just Star Trek.
Sure. Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
It doesn't make any sense, but, yeah. You know, Star Trek.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for this. I mean, if it's going to be capitalism at its base, then somebody needs to be doing some oversight.
Well, so once again, people like, and I've talked about this before because my wife, who you know, has an MBA and was really big into like economics and stuff in undergrad, like points out that Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations was also accompanied by a second volume called "What on Moral Sentiments" or whatever, which is about how capitalism has to be sort of seen through the lens of morality, and everybody just ignores that entire book,
right?
Basically.
Yeah, so. I mean, like any sort of social construction, I think people can choose. I think that's, you know, certainly, let's just touch a hot stove. Right wing people tend to misuse religion a lot, sort of achieve their social goals.
Yeah.
Economic systems, I think, if anything, I like capitalism. I think it's good. I like socialism. I think that's good. I like any number of different systems. I think the trick is not being beholden to one philosophy so much as using the right tool for the job.
Yeah. I think the problem that we experience is that the ideal solution is too complicated for people to understand on a regular basis. Like it needs to, I feel like it needs to be some sort of sliding scale between capitalism and socialism, right? Because capitalism does a great job of incenting people to go out and make things. Socialism does a great job of taking care of people.
I was going to say, that's exactly where capitalism falls down, is capitalism.
Exactly. Yeah. Capitalism has absolutely no mechanism for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like socialized medicine, we're not going to get into it, but depending on the area that you want to figure out how you want a system, like a social system, to behave, and then sort of try to apply either market forces or what have you in order to achieve that goal. I don't think just picking one thing and saying, this is it, this is what we're going to do.
Right.
I feel like that's magical thinking and doesn't tend to lead in any, regardless, communism, social, like anybody that's just like only one thing, I think you end up holding a bag full of hurt in one direction or the other.
Impugnacious follows this up with, if you prefer a more benign question, why are tech pundits not championing / pressuring more solutions tech companies should be adopting to increase competition? Tech CEOs are already, or tech hoes, I guess, already are predisposed to not compete. I think it depends on which tech pundits you're talking about. I think there are certainly some who seem to believe, as per our previous answer, that capitalism unfettered is the way that, like, basically all problems should be solved. I think there are those of us who would argue that regulatory approach is very valid and should be enforced, because you need some degree of guide rails for these systems.
Yeah. I think that's a big problem. I mean, that's one of the problems that the EU is trying to solve, right, is that there are certain companies with too much influence, and sometimes the solutions don't seem fair, but they are... When you're starting with a situation that's unfair to begin with, sometimes an unfair solution is the only thing that works.
Yeah, and like a lot of things governmental, I think, you know, some of it's ham-fisted.
Yes.
Like the DOJ complaint, like, is kind of weird in places. A lot of sense for technical.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, one of the crown jewels of American industry is the civil aviation. And Boeing could do with a bit more oversight, because, you know, pieces keep falling off of their planes, whereas Airbus is like a little bit, you know, looking pretty great. I think there's a cultural and philosophical underpinning to a lot kind of thing. And it's hewing towards a little too much capitalism. Some of these is Facebook and all of that, or Apple for that matter, as dangerous? Not immediately, but I can understand why, you know, both the U.S. and kind of curtail the amount of power that any small set of.
Now on to some lighter questions. Mihir wants to know, what's your favorite Apple TV screensaver?
I cycle through all of them. I'm not sure. I have a favorite. I do like the space. You know, the ones from the ISS.
Those are good. Yeah. I like the, there's ones of, like, I think from the Greenland or something, like with the snow. Those are pretty cool. And then I don't know if this is also on the Apple TV, but one that I have is my screensaver / background on one of my Macs is a one in Scotland where you're going over like a loch and there's like a castle at the end or something like
that's
that.
That's pretty cool. Great. Yeah.
Like that one.
The one that it sticks in my head the most is the one from the ISS, and it's, I assume they're from the ISS. I'm pretty sure they are. And it's flying over like mainland China going toward Korea.
You can see the stark difference between North Korea and South Korea.
It's just amazing.
That's wild.
Speaking of systems, like picking a system and sticking to it, work it out. Both. Yeah, not great. I think one of the greatest features to hit the Mac in years and years and years is the those Apple TV screensavers as the desktop background.
Yeah.
Like, in the lock screen, it's moving, it's beautiful, and then it slowly settles into something. I've got mine on just continuously pick the next one.
Yeah.
It doesn't, like, I love it. I just cannot. I used to always just leave the default wallpaper because I couldn't be bothered to fix it, and I never see it anyway. But, like, that weird, cool effect, those beautiful videos, I love it.
It's really
honestly
cool.
My favorite feature of Mac OS. And
yeah, I like it a lot. Victor would like to know, what are your most and least favorite pizza toppings? Any you enjoy that others find unusual? Sauces are fair game.
Oh, wow. I probably shy away from anchovies.
I really like anchovies, but I've never tried them on pizza. Like, but I like them in like a Caesar salad. I like.
Yeah, anchovies. I love them in a Caesar salad. I don't like hate anchovies in particular. I wouldn't say, but I'm not crazy about them on pizza particularly.
They're opinionated.
Strong. You know, they're strong flavor. Yeah.
In Quebec, we have all dressed pizza, which is not all dressed. It's, what is it? Green peppers. Tomato sauce, pepperoni, cheese, I think that's it.
That's not all dressed at all. That's not even close. That's barely dressed.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And I'm not sure if it's like a half naked thing or like. Yeah, I know. So you could also get seductive, like a steamy hot dog. It's steamy, and you'd order that all dressed. And all dressed for that hot dog is just yellow mustard and coleslaw. That's it. That's all dressed. There's ketchup there. There's relish there. That doesn't count for all dressed. But I don't know what to tell you.
The one I like, which most people, I think a lot of people don't like, is I like eggplant. I really like eggplant on my
pizza. I don't think I care for that.
I like a good, there's a place near me that does breaded eggplant pretty good, but like one of my favorite pizzas is a place called Otto's, which is Portland, Maine, but also around the New England area, that does one with eggplant and ricotta cheese, and it's good stuff.
I'm not a huge ricotta fan either.
We're missing out.
They're finding the things that I don't. Yeah, I feel like I eat a lot. I mean, I feel like I'm pretty adventuresome in eating, but, and I mean, you know, I've eaten that stuff. I just, like, it's not really a thing.
Finally, Holger asks, how often do you still use your Apple Vision Pro devices? Is it more often than Apple? Because it somehow feels like they forgot it exists. See lack of immersive video content related. Did you see that MLS highlight reel? Oh my. Well, some of this we discussed at the top of the show, but as somebody commented in the Discord, yes, John and I are probably using it just as much as we were on day one.
Because we don't have one. Yeah. And plus, my dog ate my dream one. So. he must have missed that, because I said I had a dream last night that my dog ate my Vision Pro, which I don't have. It's a cautionary tale.
That's a very Maltz dream.
It's
a great thing, right. And then also equally measured a bad thing.
Guy, do you have one? You don't have one, right?
I don't. You know what? I've never even used one, which is hilarious. Wow. Because Amanda works on it.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, like, there's not one here, and I'm not going to look at an engineering device, even though. But I don't have one. I haven't been to an Apple store to see one. And I kind of want to. At the same time, I don't really want to spend $3,500 American in a year that I'm getting married and stuff. Like,
right.
It seems like a lot of money for like something that I could probably have better.
It's going to be a heck of a honeymoon in the Vision Pro, though.
That's it. We're going to basically just strap on our Vision Pros and just hole up in like a Motel 8 and just pretend we're lounging on the beach.
$3,500 bucks, I tell you, like, it's cheap for a honeymoon.
And finally, our warning that goes out again to ZM Knox: do not upgrade to the betas.
Yes, that's right. Thank you for asking if you should upgrade to the betas. The answer is no.
The answer is still no.
Or yes, depending on who gives it. Lex says yes. Prime.rebound.com. Sign up for Rebound Prime, please.